Yes. As you were reading, I was thinking, now we have the internet and we have this impression of power and knowing. And I think at the time, Hitler incarnated this new power of the electric environment, and he was not using books anymore, but the word to reach the people with the radios.
Yeah.
And somehow he was the first to somehow be identified with this new power, the electric.
Right.
Like, maybe that's why all this new tribalism of the superhuman Aryans were promoted. And then also you said that the electric environment, the radio, made this tribalism even stronger, like the Jewish and the Germans were colliding, and
yes,
also other nations.
Yeah. There was this larger effect of radio that was that people couldn't see. Maybe Joyce saw it in Finnegan's Wake, but I think, I don't know if I read the last two lines. I'm going to read this part again. Their hefty young street-fighting warriors have not the bloodshot eyes and furtive manners of the political gutter gunmen, but the personal neatness, the clear blue eyes of the police. The Anglo-Saxon would feel reassured at once in the presence of these straightforward young pillars of the law. Everything is strictly legal, nur legal, fair, square, and above a board to the letter. Everything is strictly legal, nur legal, fair, square, and above board to the letter. So I was thinking something back when I was reading the first part of this, but I can't remember now. Bert or anybody, say some other points.
It seems that he's really laid out, gave him a full description. What is the next section?
It's called race and class.
Yeah, it's really interesting how he lays out. I mean, when I think of the first part, the second part that you read today, first part last week, and then this here, it really lays a interesting foundation of all the dynamics that were going on in the early stages of his movement.
And I think also this is an example of how perception was being altered or influenced by this new, the radio.
Yes.
Well, they had the radio from like the 1923 or something, but the radio was controlled by the post office because, you know, they thought it was like the telegraph or something. But when he was writing this, Hitler, the government wasn't using the radio yet. But all this militarism was developing, which was very visible, I guess, to the people.
So there's no radio happening at this point?
There's not any major, there might have been radio broadcasts or news and stuff, but not very much. There was no government sanctioned radio broadcast when he was until 1933. They took it over after Hitler got in. They took it over.
Hitler made it useful.
Yes, I think he was not that strong until he started using the radio.
Goebbels. He had Goebbels, or maybe Goebbels was the man behind the radio, because he's the one that transferred the power from the postmaster to a new thing called the Ministry of Public Enlightenment. I'm reading this on Wiki. And it was completely then used for propaganda from that point forward in 1933, right after Hitler got in.
Okay, you look at a painter. He stuns his audience with his painting, and the musician with his music. McLuhan's point is that the new media, like radio, were the new art. And those guys staged something through radio. That was their paintbrush. That was their... you see that it's a huge new thing, and they're avant-garde artists who jumped on, created a bandwagon and pulled it off.
But he's also, they're stunned by this, and when he was writing this, seems like the public was stunned by this clean-cut military that was going to keep order in the society, because before then it would sound like total ridiculous pandemonium and thugs and crime and... So they probably felt safer if these were really clean-cut military, and well, that's how Lewis was describing them.
Yeah.
So I could see how they liked that. You know, that was probably a big difference in their society.
Yeah, they actually were trying to be visual, like using the new tools to do the old work of getting a visually organized society.
Yeah.
And did you know if McLuhan asked William Lewis about this Hitler book?
Oh, yeah, that's a famous story. When McLuhan, he brings Lewis, 1943, down to St. Louis to get him some painting commissions, and at one point he took his copy of Hitler and asked Lewis to sign it, to autograph it. And Lewis took it and threw it in the fireplace.
Wow.
Yeah. He may have even ripped it up first, but he destroyed it immediately. And that's 12 years after this book comes out. You know, and the world is, I mean, his whole world is turned upside down over the next early 30s and then other things. I mean, he leaves London in 39 because he fears he will be killed or put in jail because he's seen as a Nazi sympathizer, which he wasn't. He had written a book. He probably wrote that book to protect his ass, the Hitler cult, you know?
Yeah. Well, they probably didn't want to stay there anyway.
Yes, there is the factor. He fought for peace. He fought for peace all through the decade, writing pamphlets, recommending this and that to stop. The First World War so disgusted him because he was out there in the trenches that he did not want that to happen again. At least that's what he stated. We're not going to go through that crap again. And he pamphleteered as a peace-loving guy who wanted to help the Jews get out of wherever they were trapped, Germany and whatever, in the mid-30s. But he did it with a sense of humor. All kinds of neat titles. And one of them was, the Jews, are they human?
Bob, was it Wyndham Lewis, you said, I remember earlier when I first started listening to you, that he was invited somewhere and he brought a gun to dinner?
Yes. This would be 20 years before this. His big art. Yeah, his big art movement around that. He's got Ezra Pound. He's going to have T.S. Eliot and James Joyce. He's got Yeats on his side, and he organizes an amazing book, which I went last July to Bath Spa University outside of London to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Blast, this amazing manuscript that he made, manifesto called Blast. And in one of the books, that comes out in June 14, and then within 2 months, the world's at war in August 14, I think it is. August 1914. So he's very involved with Cunard, the woman who father, you know, she's the heiress to the Cunard wealth, the Cunard shipping lines or cruise lines or whatever they were. And I don't know if it's a artsy fartsy woman who likes him, and so he ends up going to dinner with the king to be, I think. I don't think it's the king, but the prince. At least with these aristocrats, and they all sit down for dinner, and he pulls out a gun and puts it beside his plate because he was he was supping with the enemy, and he knew it, and he also was intellectually stunning everybody. His ideas were just beyond what anybody could get. Let's see, the aristocratic woman who's responsible for him is his friend. She is horrified by this, and she subtly, carefully removes the gun from the table, you know. And I don't think Lewis put up a big resistance to it. But he was a megalomania. He had a superiority complex. He felt like he was a genius. So he was being theatrical. He knew his creating his legend, right? So I think the story, I remember this, while they're eating dinner, the copy of Blast is outside on the patio outside, and it gets rained on. And the movement is going to last 2 months. When the war starts, it's all over. But his cover titled Blast predicts the war.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And you'll see that in the Downton Abbey TV show when they show the takeover of Britain in 1914-15, and then the naivety of everybody going off to war, and then it just turns into a massive disaster. That show that's developed in the Downton Abbey TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think it's very interesting how McLuhan saw that the impact of these communication technologies brought tribalism.
Yeah.
And this that ended in war in Europe.
Yeah, the big scandal in the left world was the debate among the Socialist International, whatever it was, the first or the second, I can't remember which one it was, is that the socialists, the communist working class, said, no, we are not going to fight against each other. This is before World War One. We're not going to be broken up by the capitalists and start going back to our respective countries and fighting each other. We're the working class. We're all around the world. We're going to stay united. Well, the big controversy, and LaRouche writes about this. He knows this history pretty well. He used to write about the communist history and its advantages and disadvantages. And some of the leaders of different nations betray the international movement and go back to their countries and support the war against each other. That's the big scandal in the communist world, is that their leaders screwed up and didn't stay united and went to war. There's some kind of tribalism happening that took over them.
Yes, and for example, at the time, there was in Mexico a president who would give... We'll accept all exiles. And in Mexico, there were a lot of communists, Trotskyists,
yeah.
The people from the Spain, from nationalists and the Republicans. And it was very common, like many artists had a gun, like Diego Rivera and
right.
All the famous artists, and they would... Really,
this somewhere... is not the world of fucking of government grants. When you were an artist, this is what McLuhan liked about Joyce and these guys. These guys were professionals. They had to survive on their art, and there was a lot of competition. So, and they're not popular, and they're scary to people. You're not getting a grant from the government to make a little commune, you know. The little thing that Roxy was describing, you know, a couple hours ago that she did.
Yes, and for example, this photographer, Tina Modotti, she was an Italian, but she was Trotskyist. No, she was communist. And I think her boyfriend was involved in the assassination of Trotsky.
Mm-hmm.
And she was accused to be into that thing. So... At the time, there was a lot of...
Who are you talking about? Say the name
Tina
again.
Tina Modotti. Tina Modotti.
Who's that?
She was a photographer.
In Mexico? Is she Mexican?
No, she's Italian. She was an actress in Hollywood, and she was the girlfriend of Edward Weston.
Oh, yeah?
And they went to Mexico, and she stayed in Mexico, but then everything ended up very bad for her.
But she got involved with Trotsky.
Yes, they were all very radical at the time, and,
yeah.
And everybody was carrying a gun, and they will kill each other. And there
yeah.
were these nationalists, like workers, proletarians, but they
yeah.
were against the communists or the Trotskyists or this and that, and they were really killing each other.
Yeah, well, it was gangs. Back then, a gang could get power. I mean, that's in Laws of Media, there's a sentence. I think Eric or Marshall wrote it because, you know, some of the book was written after Marshall died, that the whole art world, intellectual world, was just torn apart in the 30s by the politicizing of everything. I mean, it was pretty bad. They didn't have a global economy. Everything had collapsed, and people weren't pampered, alfalfa sprout eaters back then. You had to fight for your day, Bert. And I lived in that environment. I grew up in that environment, and I transcended to become the peace-loving, wonderful new form of Hitler I am today.
with your youth movement.
Yeah, my youth movement. You guys could be still.
You are an example of the impact of communication technology.
That's right. You guys should be a little smarter. You should be a kid.
Android,
Bob.
The Android meme.
Yeah, Bob, you're reading this fucking book. You haven't got time to do it in your spare time, so you do it at the expense of everybody else and during the radio, and you get everybody to get their comments on it because it's about you're just reading for guidance how to start a youth movement. That's what you're doing here.